do this.
Actually, the reason this is a music recommendations episode is because on the first news story alone, you'd be gloating too much during the entire thing.
Exactly.
Every single album review would be like, well, as we all know, since everything I say is correct.
You know, then these album reviews must be correct as well.
Jesus.
Yeah. I don't get to gloat in your face that often, so when I do, it gets bad.
I mean, it's not like I was strongly
No, this isn't that bad.
This is like a you gloat to the world.
Like, this is me in general, because people commented on your thingy, and everyone said no, that he can't make his career back, so this is me telling the people that I told you so.
Yeah.
That Sean's always right.
Yeah. And I see why the importance of this is doing this on video.
Yes.
For posterity.
Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Phase. We're an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I'm Sean.
I'm Dan.
I deadass almost said I'm Dan, and I would have closed my laptop, walked up, and left the room, and just not have recorded the podcast. Like, you're going by yourself, okay?
Hey, everyone. This is Dan. This is another one of those solo episodes.
Hey. The last solo episode was me. So you're due for a solo episode.
We haven't done the solo episode penalty box.
Oh my god, okay. That's a new thing now.
And that's what we call the solo
episodes. Alright, Dan received 5-minute major for fighting, so he's been sent back to the locker room for the next period, so I'm gonna have to do the podcast by myself.
So this is episode 116 of our Fine podcast.
Yes.
And we don't have singles, we don't have traditional albums this week.
Nah.
This is just a good old fashioned music recommendations
and
of what's
news
come out recently.
And things that I'm right about.
Oh, yes. Let's go into the news really quickly so we can get to the music recommendations on this tight episode. Last week, we talked about Tekashi 6ix9ine and how there's this controversy of, okay, he's headed to prison. Is it possible that he possibly makes a return to the rap music world? Because he was saying he wanted to stage a comeback.
Yeah.
People were saying, no, he can't because he's a snitch and snitching in rap is bad.
Dan even put a poll. I said, yes. I'm like, yeah, he could do it because people are stupid. And then he's like, no, okay. And then we led up to the people. He put a poll on his Instagram,
Insta story,
and people said, no, he's not going to. But Sean's right. So
this is what it's like, folks.
Yeah, I mean, so 6ix9ine, who signed a $10 million record deal from prison.
Yeah, the rapper is reportedly going to record 2 albums, one in English and one in Spanish, I believe, from the LA-based 10K projects, is putting up the money for this. But it's unclear whether 6ix9ine could fulfill any part of the contract, because
it depends on the sentencing.
It depends on his sentencing, it depends on witness protection, some other legalities that may or may not happen for him. But yeah, just when you thought Tekashi 6ix9ine was gone, he's literally coming back in the next breath.
As I said last time, people like his music. I explained why I still don't understand it. But if there's a market for it, someone will buy into it and make money off of it. And
yeah,
that's exactly what's happening. So, told you so.
This is what you get. This is what's like, everyone. Okay.
While we're talking about broke people.
Yeah, 50 Cent is producing a documentary about Tekashi 6ix9ine. 50 Cent has this television series called A Moment in Time that looks at...
How about the moment in time you lost all your net worth?
A moment in time is going to be like moments of hip-hop and pop culture. So already there are going to be some episodes about Snoop Dogg, Scott Storch, who's a legendary hip-hop producer, and of course 50 Cent himself, where maybe it'll be the moment in time he lost all his money. Was relegated to sliding into girls' DMs on Instagram, because that's all 50 Cent basically does now. But yeah, there's a 6ix9ine documentary coming as well. I'm sure that'll be interesting and get a lot of views and be talked about in the news for like 4 days. Anyways, now we turn to, we're getting really close to having a Syndicate 23 political report, but anyways, Zed.
Pretty much.
Zed, known for his like electronic pop hits, like Middle, all that stuff,
yeah,
has been banned in China.
Because...
There's a lot of different ways to get banned in China, and even
That's what I was going to say.
Get banned in China.
Like, there's a lot of ways. I'm probably banned in China.
We're probably banned in China after talking about this story. But
I mean, we're probably banned for talking this story. If they get access to my WhatsApp messages, I'm hella banned.
Yeah, but anyways, China has been cracking down on any sort of, really just a lot of free speech. It, a lot of the context geopolitically is the Hong Kong protests.
Can we nominate China for the Noted Little Bitch Award?
Xi Jinping for the Noted Little Bitch Award.
Like, deadass. I mean,
I'm going to stop right now in case I ever go into China and go through everything.
Okay.
But it's an inherent possibility. There are similarities to other people that have been on this increasingly long list. But there was a while, maybe like 1 or 2 years ago, where Xi Jinping banned all images of Winnie the Pooh because he hated that protesters were using Winnie the Pooh's likeness as a replacement for him. So not only do they, like, in freedom of speech or like the lack thereof in China, not only do they go to like what criticizes the government, but what alludes to criticism of the government. So recently the big thing was a South Park episode that was literally called Banned in China, where they joked about the Chinese censorship and all that stuff. That episode got banned in China. All of South Park got wiped in China. And if you think South Park's the only ones that's not caught in the crosshairs, the NBA is also now banned in China. But now
Zed, everything is fucking banned in China.
Yes. And now, because we're talking about this music-wise, Zed, the electronic DJ, has been banned in China for what? Not making a music, not talking about anything else. He liked a South Park tweet.
Yes.
That's kind of why the whole explanation was there. But for liking a tweet from South Park, a button that I could really press right now, because I'm looking at this article, you get banned in China.
You get banned in China. So everybody likes South Park tweets and get banned in China.
Yeah. It'd be really funny. They can't ban all 6 billion of us, right? But it's... So Zed was... The reason why Zed's banned in China is because Zed was actually on tour while this was happening and was going to have some tour dates in China. And now he's not doing that. So,
wow. So China for the Not a Little Bitch Award.
China, extremely normal, extremely stable country, just like the United States. Rihanna has confirmed that she's turning down the Super Bowl halftime show because she will not be a sellout.
I like this.
Woke Rihanna. I mean...
She's like, I can't do it. I couldn't dare do it. For what? Who gains from that? Not many people. I just couldn't be a sellout. I couldn't be an enabler.
Yeah.
And she said, there's things with that organization that I do not agree with at all, and I was not about to go and be of service to them in any way. Props to you, because first off, that sport's stupid. Second off, they're really bad.
First off, the sport's stupid. Second of all, the sport basically only exists to hug the cultural conservatives in the United States. It exists to hug the cultural conservatives in the United States and give them a warm embrace to make them feel that their country isn't dying. Because they made Kaepernick, for his like sort of silent protest, they completely ruined his like NFL career. There was a guy who wore a headband that had like a religious quote on it recently, on that Tebow shit, and the NFL was about to fine him. Instead, they're allowing him to not have the fine, and he's giving all the money away to a charity. So you can have freedom of speech and you can have protests, so long as it's about God and religion and things that don't offend feeble-minded, weak, easily triggered conservative Americans. But to make this even more music-related, there are definitely signs, like lines being drawn in the sand between sellout Jay-Z, who's gone over to the NFL, and Rihanna and a number of other celebrities, mainly black celebrities, who are like, no, we're still boycotting the NFL. Fuck that shit. I'm sure the NBA will pay us a significant amount of money to do their halftime show and a significantly better sport.
As long as you don't sit down with war criminals and watch an NFL game.
Yeah,
so they can sort of think political affairs slowly happening.
Really close.
We are.
One day the bombs are going to drop, and there's going to be a bonus episode in the audio phase queue called Syndicate 23 Political
Affairs. And that's when we set down our career, and that's when we get Dan banned from everything.
Yeah. This is a big banned episode. Tyler, the Creator, talked more about his like ban in the UK and homophobia in this interview with The Guardian. And I'm kind of... I'm really exhausted by Tyler, the Creator. So
he's really extra.
Yeah. He talked about Eminem's use of homophobic slurs when dissing him on Kamikaze. It was weird because Tyler, the Creator, has used homophobic slurs and is also gay.
Dude has used like an extreme amount of homophobic slurs.
Like the first 10 years of his career were homophobic slurs.
Like literally call everybody gay. I'm like, you know you're gay, right? Like that's...
And like everyone knew it.
You a kraut. Like, you're a kraut. I'm like, well, that's true.
So the thing, Tyler was trying to explain why he was so outwardly homophobic while also literally being like the gayest man in rap during the early 20s, the early aughts, I guess. And he says, that's the thing, bro. People knew I wasn't homophobic. People knew the intent. That tree over there could be a faggot. Who hasn't played Call of Duty online and heard some 11-year-old call you that because you killed him? You knew the intent behind it.
I mean,
no,
they usually say something
then
else.
Then people were faking, like, it's homophobic. A word that Tyler, the Creator, is also used to this. He's like, but let's not go there. No, but, like, he's trying to say that, which is maybe the worst, like, Ben Shapiro-level defense of all time, 11-year-olds say bad words on Xbox Live, so I can say it. You're using the Xbox Live defense.
That's fucking rough.
Just stop what you're doing and jump off a bridge. The annoying thing with Tyler, the Creator, is that, like, he encapsulates, without even knowing it, like, all of the hatred and bigotry and homophobia that exists in the black community, but he is it himself. And he's starting to turn around, and I genuinely, like, celebrity aside, Igor is his best work.
Oh, it's a fucking amazing album.
One of the
album.
Best works of this year.
100%.
And shows, like, a complete shift, and shows he has, like, genuinely kind of looked back on this and grown out of it a little bit. But then you have shit like this, where he's...
He's still an idiot.
He's still a complete idiot, which is why you look and see what celebrities and musicians
look at what Lil Nas X has done about homophobia.
Oh, yeah.
That's just a complete polar opposite.
Yeah.
And doing something right, because he calls out the culture and everything and said, hey, look, I'm a black guy, obviously, and look at all the stuff I had to deal with growing up, because in the black community, homophobia is huge, and it's something that needs to be addressed a little bit more, so...
Yeah. It's a totally different contrast of, like, showing that, of what you can do. And
he also Tyler, Creator also did call Pomona Los Angeles, so he is really whack. Case in point.
Sure, dude. First of all, if anyone from Los Angeles tells you they're from the Antelope Valley, they're a cop. That's a cop. I just a fact.
Where are you from, the Antelope Valley?
Cop.
Narc!
Narc. Okay.
This is very good.
I have really horrible segues, but speaking of narcs... Lil Peep's mom is filing a lawsuit against the late rapper's managers for negligence, claiming wrongful death. So basically her argument is kind of similar to the Mac Miller argument. There's a couple other, like, similar things where now we're upset that the artist's management, the artist who died of a drug overdose, was not keeping better care of the artist. Which is, I've always found to be an interesting defense, because... While all of these deaths are tragic, I'm not saying, like, Mac Miller or Lil Peep deserved it, which is usually how you begin a really good point, but, like, these are the individual decisions people make to take dangerous substances, to get them off the streets. I mean, like, to get them off of the street, like, from the streets, and then take them for your own short pleasures. But you take on that risk as a drug user of, like, something bad could happen. And is it the manager's role? It starts to be, like, what is professionally responsible versus, like, what is overcroaching your boundaries? And it's not like the managers are, like, signed a contract to be his babysitter, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because there's other ways that managers have done this, or bands in general. It's hard when you're a singer-songwriter because you're kind of on your own in a way. If you're in a band environment, for example, Dive. Dive, the lead guy of Dive, he's been in and out of rehab and other things, and that's what... Their latest album is a big time about, so that it's people trying to help him get help, basically. I mean, he was arrested for drug possession, other stuff as well. So, and then look at the 1975 with Maddie's drug addiction. So, and then his bandmates trying to help him as well. So that's a thing of, you need to surround yourself with people that you know will help you eventually.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that, when you get a manager, you have to really be careful of who you're picking to be your manager. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because if this case gets a bit of traction, then that's going to serve up a lot of things in the near future. Because how many times have we done this on a dance of a senior songwriter that has died from overdosing? I mean, that's just
kind either of suicide or overdosing.
So, and then especially if it's a senior songwriter, not a person in a band, then you could put a lot of that onto the manager, especially if this case gains a bit more traction and if they eventually win it, which would be kind of crazy. But I mean, I'm not putting it past them, because the manager does at a point have something to say about it, because they're the ones who are booking them gigs, doing this, and you can see the state of the artist and whatnot. You said, hey, take a second back or something and try to get him help.
Yeah.
So.
And there's, what you said there was really interesting, was that it's a lot about, as a musician, as an artist, who are the people you're surrounding yourself
exactly.
with? Because apparently,
if it's somebody who's just trying to make money, then you know they're going to abuse you all the time. I mean, that happened a shit ton in the 50s and 60s all the time, where managers were just trying to make money, and you would just be constantly torn, and that's why a lot of people got hooked on drugs at that time, because they needed them to stay awake.
Yeah,
Judy Garland happened, Johnny Cash, etc.
And then there's the manager's role as far as, like, am I there just to make sure, like, the cash cow keeps going?
Exactly.
Or to what point are you enabling? Because the suit, actually, as you read further, the suit alleges that one of Peep's managers, in addition to, like, trying to instigate a sexual relationship with him, which is a little interesting, apparently frequently supplied Lil Peep with ketamine, different all types of, like, drugs that would have stymied an overdose.
Yeah, that's a no-go for me.
There's a couple of different, like, factors. There's when you surround yourself with good friends and good band members. There's when you surround yourself with, like, managers who don't necessarily have your best interest at heart, but they're trying to sustain things. And then you have, like,
assholes. And then you have assholes.
And then you literally have enablers who are making this thing worse. And they see it as a cash cow, but, like, they don't care about the unsustainability of potentially killing the artist.
Exactly.
And that's capitalism, baby.
So Drake is extremely whack for many reasons. We've already know he's fake Jamaican. He's has a kid. He has the worst tattoos ever that he had to cover up because he wanted to support the Toronto Rappers, and that's why he's on the No Little Bitch Award. Mm-hmm. Shortlist, because that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But apparently, Dennis Graham is his father, correct?
Yes, Dennis.
They said that Drake lied about their estrangement in order to sell more records.
So, like, of course, Drake has talked about his daddy issues a lot.
Yeah, he talked a hell about his daddy issues.
About his parents his dad not being there, leaving his mom, all that stuff. Some might call it the story of Adidon. But, like, it's really just this case where Drake has built his entire career, not his entire career, but much of his career off of these stories about an absent father.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in addition to also being an absent father himself, his dad says the stories are bullshit.
And then Drake says that, every bar I spit was the truth.
No, that's a lie.
First off, that's an extreme lie.
Like, there's just straight things that Drake is just lying about in his raps. Like, that's just, like no cap, Drake caps. Like, that's a story. Like, that's it. That's all I got. Like, that's there. But
God, he's so whack.
Of course, there's this interesting thing of, like, estrangement. And I'm not going to say that Dennis Graham is, 100% totally right, too. Because there are just some, like, fathers who just, like, want to fuck with their kids' money. And then with their kids'
money. Yes,
like,
I want to fuck with all of my grandson's money. Thank exactly. you very much.
Exactly. Like, there's
the Bald Brothers.
And there can be, like, negative influences and, you know, like, petty family shit that gets involved,
exactly.
too. But, like, it's not like this is the first time we found out that Drake is kind of capping a lot. It's, like, wouldn't be a surprise if we found out this was totally real. So, again, audio face, and we report, you decide.
Yeah, and
Rip
Shep Smith. Oh my God, I forgot about that. I'm surprised it took that long to rip him. So,
yeah.
Anyways,
do you have any other thoughts on that? Or
no, he's a fake Jamaican. He's extremely whack. I don't like him. He's also a Toronto Maple Leaf fan, so that gives you like
can't have that.
More hatred for you. So we have recommendations because we're not reviewing shit this week and we just want to talk about music that we've been listening to. So
yeah, that's how it goes.
That's pretty much how that's my segue into this. Dan, go.
Oh, I'm starting first. Okay, sure.
Your name is first on the list, so that means you go first.
Sure. I get, that for, literally is how rundowns
once,
work. I guess
which red man's not in control.
Okay, so I will start with Robert Glasper. So Robert Glasper is a jazz pianist who takes this sort of production and takes it to hip hop and rap.
No, when you put Robert Glasper, I'm like, that's a wild pick, but I fucks heavy with.
Yeah. Fuck Your Feelings, which came out in 2019. I'm not sure. I think it was like either just in October or just in September. But
it was pretty soon, right?
It's kind of, I don't want to call him like Madlib, but he takes that sort of rooted in jazz and stuff in the 70s and 80s, and rather than like flipping jazz music and taking records the old school way and remixing it, he's kind of creating it as like himself as a backdrop to where the Madlib comparison continues. Just this murderer's row of some of the up and coming artists, some of the old school. Like, you got a song with YBN Curday and Herbie Hancock on it.
Well, didn't he have one with Yasin Bey?
Yeah, this is Yasin Bey one at the end here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one I listened to, because anything at Yasin Bey, I always look at, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. The entire thing's on here, but I was alluding to the YBN Kurde Bilal Herbie Hancock song Gone, which was just this really sort of like, it shows this template of having jazz in it, having rap in it, having it go kind of all together.
Never much of a dreamer, had premonitions, reminiscing about the old days. Now they gone from the demolitions, different visions of my former self. Now that nigga visit, every so often he comes out, then he's getting missing. Shit is wicked. All my day ones near me, I like familiar faces from a place where they take your shoes and steal your laces. Real evasive, but most of all, I feel amazing. Like fucking 10 bad hoes of all Brazilian races.
It definitely feels a lot like a throwback sometimes. If I could complain about it, I could say that sometimes in trying to capture that old feeling, it accidentally sounds like it should have come out a decade ago.
Right.
But like, I just, and Robert Glasper has been at this for a while. So like, he has been making music for a decade. But like, I really love where he's going with these songs and with these tracks. I really like that this sort of space in rap exists to where we're going to mix like traditional instrumentation and knowledge. Because a lot of the songs, I don't remember the ones that come to my head, but there's, in Fuck Your Feelings, there's a ton of like jazz piano that's in it. Right. So that's just always a pleasure. And then you have just smooth, fairly inoffensive, if not a little bit stated sounding rap, but I'm really fine with it. Especially because of a lot of the stuff that's been coming out recently. There's been this whole media frenzy around DaBaby, who's released like three albums this year. It's kind of on a come up. I tried listening to it. I was gonna put on the music recommendations if I liked it. Just boring trap. The only good thing about DaBaby is that all the albums are 25 minutes long.
It's true.
So you can
because someone told me, oh, you should listen to DaBaby. I'm like, oh, you haven't heard of them? I go, no, I put them on. Like, this sounds like everybody.
Yeah.
The same. Like, there's nothing special about
it. It's once again, like, there's people who passively listen to music and see, like, what's charting and what's interesting. Yes. Like, what's, got the current, like, craze of the week. And then there's audio-based music listening, which is totally different and a lot more varied. But my main thing is Robert Glasper, really interesting rap sort of thing right now. But if you're looking for a little bit of a fresh breath of air from what you usually get in rap today, right now, which is very repetitive as shit, which is why we've been doing a lot less of it on Audioface recently, to be real, then you can go to Robert Glasper. Sean, without you, go ahead with my pick you stole.
No, I said it first, so bitch, I get it. Caribou. I don't know how the hell I haven't talked. Well, I've mentioned Caribou a few times on the podcast, but I mean, Dan hasn't made anything since 2015 until about 4 days. Dan of Caribou.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's too many Dans in this world. Don't stop naming your kid Daniel.
I agree.
Chris, Daniel, need to get banned.
As someone who graduated in a high school class of about 5 other Daniels, I'm done with
it. There was like 15 Daniels. That was way too many Daniels.
But yeah, Daniel from Caribou has...
He just released a single about four or five days ago. So that's why I could actually talk about him. But anyways, he's one of my favorite electronic producers of just eclectic sounds.
Yeah.
Swim, which is made in 2010, is an album that is one of my staples of, I have nothing to listen to, I just put it on, that's Swim. I listen to that album a lot. There's a lot of little soundscapes in it that are awesome, like La Lil Bella, which I can never say. It's only a 2.5 minute piece, but it's like this little weird progressive house mix, which I wish would be a longer track, but he just made it into a little experimental track that he didn't want to make any longer. Leaf House, Sun, Odyssey are tracks that are fantastic on that album. I remember when that came out, and that's what got me into Caribou, because he's had a couple of albums before that in the early 2000s. But his latest album was 2015, Our Love, which I know you love.
I fucking love that.
He has one of my favorite songs on there, which is Can't Do Without You, which is probably his most well-known piece, maybe. I can't do without, can't do without, can't do without. that, Silver, I know were really good for the first two opening tracks on for Our Love. Fantastic album. Good top to bottom. I still prefer Swim, but I think that's because it's just a little more experimental. Our Love is a bit more dance music heavy, but it's still, it's very, very unique in what he produces and mixes. So, I mean, he goes with, and he goes all around different people, but under Caribou, he makes kind of his own sounds. But he released a single on the 8th of October called Home. A little bit of departure from what he did in his last album, but it's still fantastic. So I'd say check out, check out all his music. It's very, very, very good. If that means he's releasing something soon, then
thank Christ.
Thank Christ, because I need it.
Yeah.
I need it, need it.
Sean and I think we'll still go back and forth between Our Love and Swim, but I think Our Love is a good like intro to Caribou.
It's definitely a good intro. I think you should start off with Our Love.
But I think we can both agree that we both highly encourage you to go past Our Love and like after you listen to it, listen to Swim a lot. Because they're both really, really good albums.
Listen to Swim a lot.
Whether you like one or the other kind of goes down.
Yeah, if you like preference. If you have kind of my taste in music where you like a little more experimentalness, Swim is a bit more of that. Our Love is a little bit easier to listen to.
It's a little more conservative as far as the experimentation goes, but I think it's still very much there. And it has kind of more of that more like upbeat, faster pace that I generally tend to gravitate towards.
Yeah, no.
My turn, Gold Fur. Now, this is really interesting and I fucking love Gold Fur. I'm not quite sure.
Just the artist.
This artist. Yeah.
I've heard of Goldfur.
Very, very much on the come up. I got this from a friend, Georgia, who recommended this to me. Shout out, Georgia. Really good recommendations as always. I would recommend. So,
what's the sound of?
What it sounds. I'm going to go into basically their only existing EP, Prelude, which combines all the songs that have been released. Because Goldfur does that. Oh, you're new to the music industry? Here's how it works. You slowly release a bunch of your singles every 2 months.
The Japanese house.
And then you put it all together, more or less, in one EP, and then you kind of continue from there. I don't like that kind of thing. We can do that conversation later.
Yeah. Because that's like, the Japanese house did that. She's been in the recent music since 2013, but she just had her first album this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that either, personally, but...
Yeah, there could be a whole conversation had about, like, the way the music industry leads new artists to, like, how to publish and put out music, but like I said, different conversation.
Music?
If you go to Prelude by Gold Fur, you'll get, like, the bulk of what they've made, and it's, like, a little bit alternative, but if you, like, made Zoo collaborate on all the songs. So, like...
So, is it like...
Like, it's... So, like, I think the song Sirens does this best, where... It's a little bit dancey, but it definitely still feels like it's rooted in something indie.
Kind of like the second law of Muse.
Significantly less experimental. I'd say the same sort of mood.
But that mood of mixing the two, which is very rarely done.
Yeah.
But I don't know why. I'm like the only person that liked that album on planet Earth, I swear.
Yeah.
And I wanted more people to do that shit. So if this is what this is, I will like Gold Fur.
Yeah. I'm definitely excited to see
what
they come out with more. But... It's just got this groove that you don't always get with alternative synthiness. I'm not sure, but it just, whatever they're doing, they should keep doing more of it, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah. So, I don't think I've ever talked about Yeonzi and his solo work on the podcast before.
In passing, but never a deep dive.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't know if I wanted to put Atoms for Peace in there because we never really dove into Atoms for Peace before either.
That's an episode.
But I was going to say, I can't, because we would dissect every single song and live performance they've ever done into a little mini episode. So that's why I didn't put that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to put Miles Kane, but we just talked about him a little bit. So anyways, Yeonzi, who's the lead, the head man for Sigaros, he has a pretty deep solo career that he just released stuff with Alex Somers, who's his longtime partner. like 3 days ago or something, which kind of soundscapes, because him and Alex, they've had Rice Boy Sleeps, an album that came out in 2009. It's Alex and Yonzi, I think is what they called it under, and they've been touring on it for this year. But he had his own album called Go in 2010 that I fucking love. And it's, again, one of those albums like Swim that if I have nothing to listen to, I put it on because it's one of my staples that I listen to.
It's ambient, but how much are the similarities between Yonzi and Sigurus, let's say?
Go is definitely very, very, very upbeat, happy music for the most part of the album. It's definitely different than a lot of Sigurus. You still have some tracks like Hengelas, which is the last track on it, which is kind of a more deeper Sigurus sounding track. Grow Till Tall, which is especially live. He does have a live album on Spotify. Grow Till Tall is an amazing piece. It's kind of like Weird Fishes, where it just keeps building and building and building and building. Yeah. And his voice on it's incredible. But the opening track, Go Do, like you have Tornado, Animal Arithmetic, Boy the Lacoy, those songs are so upbeat. It's nice to hear that from him. And it's always puts me in a happy mood. If I want to listen to something, I've always put on this album. A lot of his other works, like Rice Boy Sleeps, his latest album, Lost and Found, again with Alex Somers, those ones are definitely a bit more ambient sounding, kind of Sigurus sounding, where they're just literally said, we want to make sounds that no one else has created, which right. I always love, because you don't know what you're going to get. So they were trying to figure out how to put Rice Boy Sleeps with an orchestra, and they were like going in a couple interviews of like, I don't know how this is going to sound, because we literally went in the kitchen and just made some sounds that I don't know how an orchestra is going to replicate it, but they've been doing fantastic with it, and people have been going to the shows, and it's very good work.
It's very rare that an orchestra has made a piece sound worse. In fact, I would encourage, free idea out there, I would encourage any rap artist to bring a full orchestra to their next live tour.
Coming from orchestra, I did see Sigurus live in 2017 with the LA Philharmonic.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. The first half of the show was with an orchestra, and the second half was just the band. What the orchestra did with them was incredible. It's something that I will never forget. And that live show is on YouTube. The Disney Concert Hall has the entire show on there. So go and listen.
Yeah. Absolutely. That sounds like the fact that you had me at orchestra, but the fact that they're going to try to go for like a happier sounding ish song, not necessarily.
But that's like, his record in 2010 is definitely happy. So because if we obviously started the podcast in 2017, so that's way before or way after he did some of the solo stuff. So it's like, you know what? Sigurus themselves, in general, all of the bandmates have done an incredible line of work. It's just a lot of it's hidden.
Yeah.
So the former keyboardist, he's done an opera, a 3-part opera. So it's like craziness what they've done. So,
yeah. It's also cool that this is like one of Sigurus's like weird, they're on their like lull period.
Especially now because of all the things with the drummer and other things as well. We don't know when we're gonna get back, but all the bandmates are still. Even the guy who left the band in 2013, they still talk, and he makes his own music and stuff. So I'm totally blanking on his name. But anyways,
interesting.
Your final pick, go.
My final pick for this episode is Elder Island. The best way I can describe them is really easy listening. Kind of relaxed, like not quite lo-fi beats to hip-hop, like Study 2, whatever that thing is called.
Oh yeah, I know that YouTube channel.
Because that is a little more like hip-hop influence, I would say, with the beats. This feels a lot more like
heard something from them.
Maybe Otzeki in their like calmer sort of frame of mind, but it's just a really kind of chill, groovy. The bass is very in the front of the work, so that's why I gravitate towards it. But the Omnitone collection came out this year, and it kind of has like a good number of songs that kind of illustrate this the most. But my favorite song maybe isn't necessarily from the Omnitone collection. It's one called Black Fur that they did a little while ago. I want to say in 2018.
Black Fur, okay.
Off of their LP Seeds and Sand. This is my favorite. This came in 2016.
Okay.
And this, if you want to like kind of get into it, is really just kind of, you'll get that easy listening. Okay, very bass driven, but also just kind of like a song that progresses out and has like some house elements, but it's really just feels like it fits really nicely. I just get, unlike a lot of bands, I feel like every song they make just has a completeness to it. Like a sense of it all sort of comes together. Mm-hmm. And I think what I was alluding to is progressive house does this too. Where at the end of the song, you feel like, okay, all the elements came together and made the song and acted and played out.
That's why I like progressive house so much.
I don't say this is progressive house, but it has that element and that sense of completeness that I think makes every Elder Island song like brilliant in its own right. But
sweet.
Yeah, Black Fur is really good. The Omnitone collection, I haven't heard it through all the way, but it just came out, and what I have heard from it, I think Vulture is actually a song in there. It's really smooth, and I want to see them make more of this shit.
That's cool. I would definitely check that out. I like your recommendations today. So my last pick is, I have no idea how to pronounce her name, because of course she's fucking Icelandic, and they always have the wildest names. Hildur, good, and that... I'm not gonna. That sound is a DT sound with the weird.
Gudnadóttir.
Yeah,
Hildur Gudnadóttir. You'll find it in the description.
You'll find the description in the podcast. But Hildur, Hildur. Type in her first name and then she'll pop up.
Yeah.
She does scores for movies and films and TV shows. And her latest one is Joker, which was a fantastic film, and I actually recommend you seeing it. It's very good. But the thing that I first heard her in was Chernobyl, the HBO miniseries, and she scored that. And I was wondering who did the score of that when I was listening or I was watching the show, because I'm like, this is an amazing score, because it's, you know, my favorite thing of when you do a film soundtrack or a TV soundtrack is if it's kind of a third character in its own thing because of what the soundtracks do. Very few people can do that where it makes its own presence heard. And she did that in Chernobyl. Very, very well done, where it has this underlying theme throughout the entire show, but she does it in different pieces. That make it fantastic to watch. So you're like the opening scenes when, you know, the whole fucking thing goes up because it's Chernobyl. When everyone's trying to get through and figure out what's going on and whatnot, the soundtrack is overlaying it and it's fantastic. And then the rest of the show, every little thing when they're doing, anytime they're going to the reactor or this or that, it has an overlying theme that is throughout the show, and it's very, very well done. Dark. Kind of mysterious in a way, but it's good.
This is the best when you have I like what you said, when the music becomes an additional character in the film. Because when we saw Phantom Thread,
Phantom Thread is still, that is the epitome of a third character in it. And this one in the film comes very close to that, which is saying something, which is Joker.
There's a lot to, let's say in the media, and we're not going to do this here, but in the media, there's been a lot to unpack with Joker about what it means, what it stands for, what it talks about. But about the music, let's say.
Yeah, let's talk about the music. I think people are like going way too above of the film. Like,
I also agree.
Violence. I'm like, dude, have you not been watching U.S. films for the past 45 years? I just blow shit up all the time. This is like, oh, this actual like a mental breakdown of a character. Everybody loses their minds.
I think a lot has been overblown about the Joker itself. I think a lot has been overblown about violence in films. And I think a lot has been overblown about the influence of the Joker on impressionable American minds. And yet the entire thing on all sides just largely overblown. But with the music.
Exactly. With the music, oh my God. Because
the music isn't really talked about in any of these conversations about like what it does for the film.
It is incredible, the soundtrack. So if you've watched the film, and this isn't really a spoiler, but the film basically just follows Arthur, who's the Joker, the entire film, and it's pretty quiet and other things, so the soundtrack is very, very prevalent. But there's a scene when he's dancing in the bathroom, and it's called Bathroom Dance, that is an amazing, amazing, amazing piece in a film. Where you just feel you feel the music, you feel the scene, everything because of the music. And the director Todd Phillips, when he was going with Joaquin Phoenix, they just had the soundtrack in the background when they were making that scene. And he said it was kind of an improvised scene to the music, and a lot of it was done to the music. And I guess he sent her the script, and then she wrote the music based on the script. And before anything was really filmed and whatnot. And it's incredible, this soundtrack. I remember when I was just in the film, or in the theater, just sitting there like, I want to go watch this again for the music alone. Because, I'm going to go watch it because I like it, and especially I like Joaquin Phoenix as an actor. He did very well in this film, obviously. Yeah. And in other films I've liked. But the sounds in this are awesome. I can't recommend it enough, just for the music. So, yeah, she's an up-and-coming artist, too, where now with those two pieces, she's done a bunch of other work, and Sicario and a couple other stuff. But
she's done
now,
scores, and then scores for TV shows, and now she's gotten to scores for theater, and that's like,
and now
you're only going up
from there. Well, now, especially in a big motion picture like this, it's now, okay, there's another composer that I like that's young, bright, and has very, very good ideas. To where it's not just my two favorites, which are Hans Zimmer and Johnny Greenwood, where I feel like they're the only two that are really breaking out and doing their own thing with soundtracks. She's definitely up there now.
Great to see a woman doing that.
Exactly. And what's up with Icelandic artists and being just fantastic?
I think you just got like such an incredible thing for Icelandic artists.
I don't know. I got an eye for that shit, apparently.
It's one of those.
This has been Audio Face.
This has been Audio Face. Next week, we've got Foals and Third Eye Blind.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some other music stuff that's been out there. Keep sending us stuff, because a lot of times we think we're going to review some stuff, and then we get sent something that's significantly better, and we decide to bump one for another.
Yeah, and that's been happening a lot, especially this year, because some of the months have been so busy. We can only, basically, our thing is we can listen to 3 albums per episode maximum. We've tried 4, but it just it escapes my mind. So there's a couple albums this year where we did 4 that I keep forgetting about. So I just need, especially when it comes to the end of the year, we have our end of the year awards, which we need to go back on. And then we also have the top 50 thing we want to do for the 2010s, which is, fuck, that's a lot.
It's going to be a lot, but I think it's going to be a very, very fun labor. This has been Audio Face. Play us out with the socials.
What does it mean to play us out?
One more time, Shepard.
One more time, Shepard. This has been Shep Smith.
Him with like 30 different iPads around him. This has been Shep Smith from the Fox News deck. Signing
off for the last time, because they don't like gay people. What?
This has been Shepard Smith distorting.
You can find us you can find us on the
Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, I know. I'll play us out.
We're there. Jesus. What does that mean to play? Exactly. We'll do it live.
I'm doing it live. Christ. So you can find us on the interwebs on Twitter and Instagram at AudioFacePod. Follow me, where I'm actually now public, so you can view my shit if you want to. because I feel like interacting with humans for once in my life. SW Suarez. We'll see how long that lasts. I may last like 3 days. I don't know. Follow Dan at Twitter at Dan from the web and on Instagram at Dan from the internet. And send us some shit. And yeah.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.audioface.show where you'll find.
The one I never know.
Yeah, it's a new one. We're working on it. We're still getting some videos on there. And, you know, we'll put the video versions of the reviews that we have. Not so much the music recommendations, because that's just like a copyright strike right now.
That's a super copyright strike, which kind of sucks, but whatever.
Yeah, this is not the YouTube policy episode.
This is not the review.
But thank you very much for watching and listening. Jesus Christ. And we will talk to you next week. Cheers. Bye.